Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
I swear I am older than dirt, and I've never seen anybody play air violin.
Hey, I just got it out. You know, that's why I have my chin in the right place.
You did. I'm a man. Congratulations. Anyway, this is LA Talk Radio. It's Thursday night, and this is, of course, what show are we? Oh, The Writer's Block. Jerry and I just finished another show, so we are at Studio 2, and it is now 7 o'clock, right, straight up. And we are in the studio with Bob Brill, and of course, Jerry is here with me, and I am Jim Christina, your host, along with Bobby Jean Bell, who is on the phone in Albuquerque. Now, Bobby? Bobby?
Did we lose Bobby already?
We can't have lost Bobby. They're still there. Oh, Bobby, you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello.
All right, I got you.
He had to put the pot up. That's what happened.
Okay.
Okay.
And he wasn't smoking it either.
No. And you know what? I still have not got a new ad from
I know.
Ms.
It's
Bell.
True.
It's true. It's she's just not doing. Oh, incidentally, I want to thank you so much for your support this week.
You're welcome.
Ms. Bell. And We're on the air for another week, so we're good to go. Anyway, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Out West Shop. It's your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rock Mount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off on your order. Order toll free, 877-340-9378. And you get them live and on the phone and close and personal. And it would be Bobby Jean and Jim Bell. And I think that's all you have on your line now, isn't it?
It is. You get us.
We get you. Lucky us. Okay, and it's also brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a new writer, you are exactly who we're looking for. If you finish that book and you've typed the last period and you got your manuscript sitting out in front of you on your desk and you're thinking, shoot, what do I do now? Well, I'll tell you what you do now is you pick up your phone and you call 805-795-3165 or you send me an email at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com and send us a manuscript and we'll take a look at it and tell you where you go from there. We're here to help you get your book on the shelf, get it published, get it ready to go. We'll format and edit and everything else you need to have done, and we're not going to charge you your firstborn, although I won't say not all the way. We may ask you to lend them to us for a week or two. Yard work, you know. House painting.
Dishwashing.
Anyway, give us a holler if you're a new writer, and new writers only. I mean, that's who we're here to help. And again, that number is 805-795-3165. Okay. Tonight's guest, he's from Canada. He is an award-winning author of more than 60 books of science fiction, fantasy, and nonfiction for readers of all ages. He won the Aurora Award for Best Canadian Science Fiction Novel in 2009 for Marseguro. I don't know. I can't pronounce anything. DAW Books, the sequel, Terra Insegura, was shortlisted for the same award. His more recent novel for DAW, The City Born, which is what we'll be talking about tonight, is a standalone science fiction novel. His next novel for DAW, his ninth, is World Shaper, launches a new series in September. Other recent work includes The Masks of... I'm just gonna go. The guy's a really good writer. He's written a ton of books. He's in Canada. Mickey's his agent. And holy crap, where do you come up with these names? Welcome, please, to the Writer's Block, Mr. Ed Willis.
Thank you. applause and everything. Wow.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So the crowd gets.
I didn't know you had a studio audience.
Well, you know, we got to control them, but they're here. Where do you come up with these names?
Well, you know, fantasy, you come up with names. So Agrima, I have no idea where that came from. That's Masks of Agrima.
Marcia
Giro is actually Portuguese for safe harbor.
Oh.
And I wanted a planet name that meant safe harbor because it's a water world.
Okay.
And where people had fled to. And I used Google Translate until I found a language that gave me something that sounded cool, and it happened to be Portuguese. That's why that is Marsegiro, safe harbor in Portuguese. And then Terra Insegura means unsafe earth in Portuguese, because once I did that, I was stuck with it for the sequel.
So do your books sell well in Portugal?
Not that I'm aware of, no. My daughter's dance teacher is Portuguese, so, you know, at least one person understood the title.
Well, you got to love Google or Google.
Wait a minute. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Okay.
He just said, my daughter's dad.
No, teacher's my daughter's dance teacher.
Oh, dance teacher.
Yeah, see, you interrupted me over that. Holy.
I warned you, Ed, did I not?
And I do want to ask you that. I mean, Google Translate. I love Google Translate.
Me too. Like, I use it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, do you use it a lot for the stuff you write because of that?
The only other time I've used Google Translate was for a young adult series I wrote, which had some French in it, and I put it in as sort of a placeholder, and sure enough, the publisher had somebody who actually spoke French, and then they corrected it all. So it's not something I would trust. You can't trust it for, like, using foreign languages in your dialogue.
Right.
The other thing I use Google most is probably Google Street View, because in that same series, I had things set in... New Zealand and in France and places where I have not been. But of course, with Google Street View, you can walk through a village in France and see exactly what's there and then make whatever artistic changes you want to it to give it that sense of immediacy and verisimilitude. And so I've used it quite a bit for that. And then, of course, just for general research purposes, I use it all the time.
Wow. Did you just pay somebody for that word?
Verisimilitude?
Yes.
Word of the day.
Yes, I have. I subscribe and I get one a day, and then I have to use it or I lose my subscription. That's the way that works.
Oh, get out of here. Are you serious?
The little known writer's service out of New York.
Hey, well, Ed, this is Bobby, not in the studio, obviously, and I just want to mention that one of the books, your prolific writer that we all read, is City Born.
Right.
I don't know that we've said that yet tonight, so I want to just say that it was a terrific read, and can you tell us a little bit about City Born and how it kind of leapt to your imagination?
The City Born, which is my latest novel from my New York publisher, it's actually DAW, not D-A-W, for future reference. They say that as a word, even though it's actually the initials of Donald A. Wolheim, who started the company.
Uh-huh.
The City Born came to me as a, you know, all sorts of things can start a book. It can be an image or a character or something. And in this case, it was literally an image of a giant city crouched over a canyon that had been there so long that it had filled up the canyon with garbage and there were people living in the garbage. So it was that image that came to me first. And then I, as I usually do when I have an idea, I ask myself questions. Well, why? What kind of city is it? Why haven't they cleaned up the garbage? Mm-hmm. Why are there people living in it? And through that, I built the world. And then it seemed obvious to me that... when it came to characters, you needed to have one that was actually living in the garbage, and you had somebody else that was living in the city, and you brought those two together, and that set the plot off. So, but sure. It all started with that rather striking image in my head.
Wow.
And As you started to write it, did you already kind of know where or how it was going to end? I, as a reader, I felt like you were taking me along, and then suddenly it was as though a big idea revealed itself to you, and then we were off on a roller coaster.
You know, it's hard to remember exactly how the plot came about in my head. What usually happens with me is that I will write, at this point in my career with my New York publisher anyway, I sell from a synopsis. I don't have to write the book first. They give me a contract after they've seen the synopsis. And so she, Sheila Gilbert, my editor at Daw Books, bought the synopsis, and then I started writing it. And what usually happens to me is that, oh, somewhere along through the synopsis, I realize that I haven't actually figured everything out yet, and then I really have to figure things out. And so by the time I get to the end of the book, it sometimes is not terribly close to the synopsis. It usually has a general shape of the synopsis, but a lot of things have changed along the way. And then Sheila will talk to me about it, and she's been doing this for a very long time, and one of the top editors in science fiction fantasy, won a Hugo Award. And she is very good at saying, you know, that didn't make a lot of sense, or you didn't think that through all the way, or your character, you need more characterization. And so that puts another layer over top of it. So it is probably true that at some point during the writing process, I figured things out, and so when it was revealed to the characters, it was actually kind of as it was revealed in my head at the same time in the writing process. I'm sure that happened.
And,
Thank you.
I've got a very short question, but I'm going to take a long way to get there. And and that's it. I think unless you're writing a textbook on a manual, that we all kind of agree that we can all agree that books are basically an escape, whether they're true or fantasy or whatever. And of the best-selling books, the best-selling books are usually true stories because that's what people, more people want to read. And then the next two genres you have are historical fiction and science fiction. And I include fantasy in that as well, and then the Harry Potters and things like that. Just that's what I do. So people like historical fiction because they escape to something familiar to them, whether it's the, you know, something in the past, the Queen of England or some war or something. But when they escape to science fiction, they escape to someone else's mind that they know nothing about. And my short question is this, I guess I want to paraphrase the Capital One credit card commercial. What's in your mind? Because I started reading this thing, I was like, I'm it just blows me away where you come up with these things and it's all fresh stuff out of your own mind. Where does your mind go?
I often say that the science fiction fantasy mindset for a writer is a muscle that you start exercising very early on. And I started very early on. I have two older brothers who read science fiction fantasy. That was in the house. And that's what I grew up with, and I wanted to read it because my brothers did. And I wrote my first short story when I was 11 years old. It was called Castor Glass Hypership Test Pilot.
Oh, get out of here. Are you serious?
Yeah, absolutely. And I showed it to my grade 7 English teacher, and he, who, in fact, if you look in the City Born, it's actually dedicated to this English teacher I'm talking about, Tony Tunbridge, because he took it and he looked at it and he took it seriously. He said, well, I don't understand why your aliens did this, and you know, this didn't make any sense to me. And there's something about that that made me want to keep writing and doing better at answering those questions as I went forward. So I wrote 4 novels in high school, and you know, and I still have unpublished novels hanging around. It was a long time before I really started getting published. But it's like a exercise program. You think in those terms. So for me, it's hard to explain where it comes from. It's just that's the way that I have trained my mind to work. Mm-hmm. It's actually harder for me. It's harder for me to write something that doesn't have a fantastic element in it. Although I do a lot of nonfiction, but I mean on the fiction side. If I'm going to write a short story, there's going to be a fantastic element, it almost certainly. And it's usually the questions that you ask in science fiction or in fantasy, or what if, you know, what if there was a city and it had filled up a canyon underneath it with garbage, and if this goes on is the other one, if that happened, then how would that affect society? And in fantasy, of course, it's an even bigger what if. It's like in the Masks of Agrima, it's what if magic were a resource that could be mined, was one of the questions that I asked myself. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really just playing is what it is. It's like make-believe. It's the same make-believe I did when I was a kid, only now I do it as a not kid anymore.
Well, yeah. Now, I'm not a science fiction writer, but I've read some science fiction. And, of course, as I compared you somewhat to Heinlein on our Facebook page, just because it was the vision that you get from this big tower sitting over the top of this garbage dump. It's pure Heinlein, you know. I mean, but
he is the father of us all, as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. doesn't everybody's stories veer from the outlines or from the small little thing you write to turn into your publishers? I mean, Bob, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking your Lancer stories had to have changed as they went, as you're writing them. And the ending comes up, and you go, "Wow, that's not exactly what I thought."
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, and I think all writers their stories veer off of the written of where they wanted them to go initially.
Well, and it's because when you're writing, there's so much more detail than there is in the synopsis,
right.
And you make up things on the fly, which then inform things that happen further on down the story. So.
Sure.
That happens not just with characters, but primarily with characters. A character does something on chapter two because it seemed like something they should do, and 50 pages later it becomes important because you remember that they did that thing, and it weaves back into the story and all that sort of stuff. It's a very evolutionary process. So
right.
the synopsis is just a seed, and then it grows
right.
Like the mustard seed out into a mighty tree, although right. mustard doesn't actually grow into a mighty tree. But
well, it grows into a pretty damn big bush.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I have to ask you, a psychiatrist friend of mine would take one of your answers there and say, so are at parties, are you the fun guy at parties, or are you the guy who stands in the corner waiting, eating something and waiting for other people to come to him?
I am not a fun guy. I'm not an unfun guy at parties, but I'm more of the, I don't mind talking to people, but I don't really like loud, obnoxious parties, and I will tend to end up in the corner with some food and hopefully talking to one person quietly as opposed to. Now, the exception to that is that I'm also an actor and a singer, and if I am asked to perform at a party, then I will gladly get up and sing at the drop of a hat. So I'm not like I'm a shy guy. It's just that I tend not to, I just don't like crowds as much as my wife, for example, loves crowds. And so we go to parties and she's the life of the party and I'm sitting over there enjoying the food.
talking to your feet. I hate parties. I hate big parties. And they make me crazy because you don't know, but maybe one or two people there, and you're there, and you're going, who the hell am I going to talk to? And so you find a corner where nobody is, and you go, man, you go grab a chicken wing, and you head to that corner, and God bless you if you make it before someone else does, because there's always someone else that doesn't like being around crowds, too. So
but then you can talk to that person if you both get there at the
well,
same time.
Well, if you get there at the same time, but you know, if it's a single chair, then I guess you're going to be real uncomfortable. Anyway, you have a protagonist, and you actually have two protagonists. They are a young lady and a young man, and they are quite interesting. And the metal towers that you have put at the center of your story, the mountain-ringed heartland, and it's as you say, it's standing across the chasm of this big canyon, and of course, it's full of garbage. And Alanya, is that her name?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay. Well, I don't know because
well,
I mean,
ask
I'm
going to pronounce it in Canadian.
Okay, Alanya, Alanya, eh?
I tend to pronounce it Alania when I'm
Alania. Okay,
it out loud.
And yeah. I had a hard time with Danyl. Is it Daniel?
It's just Danyl.
Actually,
I know somebody by that name.
Boone.
I didn't even make that one up. I know a Danyl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, Danyl is the garbage liver, and Alania is the tower liver, and they do find each other, and it's amazing. It's amazing. It's a different story.
Well, the thing I found amazing was the levels, and you sucked me in with the levels at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It was like, this is really bizarre. And I was trying to imagine that, and I'm seeing this very, very, very dark world, which I don't like dark worlds, but I found myself being kind of fascinated by that.
Yeah, it is effectively a dystopian novel, although I didn't think of it in those terms. Kind of a mini dystopia, I guess. But the whole point of the story, of course, is that the city is falling apart.
No, you sure.
So it, there wasn't going to be a lot of sweetness and light. The editor did point out to me at one point that, at least in the early going, it seemed like every time Daniel and Elenia met somebody, that person promptly died or got killed or something bad happened to them.
That's the luck of the draw.
Yeah, they were a little... Yeah,
nobody wants.
They were really
bad
news if they happened to show up. They were bad news. yeah, so it's not exactly, but it does have touches of humor, I think, because that's just the way I write. I can't help but put a little bit of humor in there. So I hope it's not too dark.
It's a wide cast of characters. You do create not only individuals but these groups. Tell us about the Rust Bloods.
Well, I knew that. If you had a situation like that where people were falling out of the city, basically out of society, and were living at the very bottom, then they would undoubtedly form some sort of organization. And the thing that naturally came to mind was gangs. So I just wanted to make a really, really nasty gang. And that's who the Rust Bloods are. They're kind of a threat to Daniel that he's had to deal with all his life. And then when Elenia drops into the picture, then they're a threat to both of them. So it gave me an immediate threat that they could flee from. Although, as it turns out, they're a pretty minor threat compared to, to everything else that's going on in the story. And, yeah, so I just tried to make them as nasty and unpleasant as I possibly could.
Yeah, like a science fiction MS-13.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't mention any tattoos, but I'm sure they're tattooed.
Oh, well,
I imagine that they were, yeah.
Well, I thought everybody had a tattoo in this story.
Well, everybody has a tattoo anyway. I don't either. Well, okay, that's three of us.
Yeah, there's three.
That makes you Bobby Jean.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do not.
Okay, so that's all five of us. None of us have tattoos. Wow. Although you don't count. You have tattooed eye thingies.
I used to.
Yeah, they've gone away now.
Gone away.
Yeah. Well, then, okay, she's back on the I don't have a tattoo list.
Ed, how many books do you publish a year? You're prolific.
Truly.
Oh, it depends on the year. That's not much of an answer, but let's see. So far this year, I had a children's biography of Angela Merkel came out in January. Was the very first thing that came out. I had a history of the emergency mine rescue competition that the Saskatchewan Mining Association has been running for 50 years. That came out recently. That's two. World Shaper will come out. That's three. I just brought out an illustrated book of science fiction fantasy poetry, so that's four. And next week I have a short story collection coming out through my own little press called Shadow Paw Press, which this is kind of launching that. So that's five. So I guess I have at least five this year, and I'm actually... There could very well be another Shadow Paw Press one in there. Would be six. And there's also the paperback of The City Born, which is only out in hardcover and ebook right now. Will be coming out in August. So several.
And are you also starting a podcast?
That is my intention, yes. It's something I've thought about for a long time. It's a bit like this. I'm fascinated by the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of connections with science fiction and fantasy authors. And I've often thought, and I'm a journalist by training, and I've hosted my own radio program, and I've hosted my own TV show, and, you know, so I have some experience interviewing people. And I thought it would be fun to interview science fiction fantasy authors strictly about sort of what we're talking about here, about the world-building process, except because, of course, I have a book coming out called World Shaper, launching a series called World Shapers, I thought... If I did this, I could call the podcast The World Shapers, and, you know, it all ties in so nicely. Mm-hmm. So I've already lined up several pretty big names in the field are willing to kick it off, and I don't think I'll have any trouble getting people after that. And, yeah, I hope to get that launched in the next... There's already theworldshapers.com is already up as a website, but I haven't actually interviewed anybody yet.
That's exciting. Congratulations.
Is it live now?
Sorry, what?
Is the website live?
The website is live, yeah. Okay. There's just nothing on it except one page that says who I am and what the idea is.
Okay.
So when do you sleep?
I was just
exactly.
Bobby doesn't sleep, so you've got to.
Yeah, Bobby
call
doesn't
her
sleep.
In the middle of the night.
I know I don't sleep either, Ed.
I sleep.
Little
Two
cat
things.
Naps.
I'm a full-time writer. I don't do anything else, right? So this is my job. I've been a full-time writer for 25 years, so I don't have anything around the edges. My best career move, I admit, was marrying an engineer, so that has helped on the income.
Now we know.
That's like Richard Polinelli. He married a teacher, or actually a PhD.
And are you doing the illustrations as well?
For
Well, you said you just did an illustrated book, and I was just wondering.
Oh, no, that was really cool. That poetry book came about 2 years ago. The poet laureate of Saskatchewan, Jerry Hill, did a challenge where for Poetry Month, which was April, every weekday he sent out two lines from published Saskatchewan poetry to all the members of the Saskatchewan Writers Guild, and there's several hundred of us, through email. And the challenge was to write new poem or either incorporating those two lines or responding to them in some way. And much to my surprise, because I think the last time I wrote poetry was in university, I responded, and I wrote a poem every day using those, incorporating the two lines that were provided, and each one of them, again, going back to how my mind works, each one of them was science fiction, fantasy, or horror. So at the end of that, I had 21 poems, and each one is actually a little story. And I knew then I'd like to bring it out, but it'd be really small. And I thought what'd be really cool would be to get an illustrator. And I asked various people, including a couple of big names in the science fiction illustration field. And they said, sure, they'd do it for, you know, more money than I was going to be able to pay them. And then I realized I was being an idiot because my niece, Wendy Nordell, who lives in Alberta, northern Alberta, is a very, very talented artist. And so I asked her, and she said she would love to. And she did amazing work to create this illustrated poetry book called I Tumble Through the Diamond Dust. That's the first poem in the book and the title of the book. And it's just a beautiful little book. It was put out by a local publisher, Your Nicholsworth Press, and available as ebook as well as a print book. And I just couldn't be happier with that. I did actually study art in university, but the only thing I ever did with it was I used to draw editorial cartoons for the weekly newspaper where I was editor. And the cartoon ideas were good. The execution was not going to put the fear of Da Vinci into any other artist.
Not so much.
That's the journalist side. You can write the stuff, but drawing it, that's another story. I'm the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob's a, he works for KNX Radio, which is a CBS affiliate here in Los Angeles, so. We're actually fortunate that he's not charging me to be here.
I haven't got my bill yet. No.
So, Ed, tell me, when you sit down to write, what is your day like? I mean, you obviously, as this is your only job, you've got like eight things coming out this year. What is your day like? I mean, when do you start? What time do you start writing? And what are your hours that you write, you don't write? You sit and have a cocktail.
I tend not to write in my home office, for one thing.
Okay.
So what usually happens is my daughter doesn't have a driver's license yet. She'll have it soon, this summer, I hope. So I take her to school in the morning during the school year. And then usually I will walk. If it's a gym day, I go to the gym, and then I go on downtown. Otherwise, I just go downtown. Oh, excuse me. Which is like a 20-minute walk from here to right downtown in Regina, which is not a very big city, 200,000 people. And there's a coffee shop I like to sit in down there and write. And so I'll work in there for a couple of hours, and then I'll either come home, or if I'm feeling naughty, I will walk over to the hotel lounge and write some more with a different sort of beverage.
Would that be an adult beverage?
An adult beverage, as they say.
It starts with
takes me to about time to walk home again, and then I bring my daughter home, and then maybe I'll do something else here. And I tend to, in the evenings too, I'll tend to do a lot of stuff like the, you know, setting up the websites or updating websites and things like that. But it just depends on what I'm working on too. There are some things, nonfiction, I tend to work on at my home office because there tends to be lots of papers I have to spread out or stuff to print off reference material. But fiction, I tend to write in a coffee shop or somewhere like that. And maybe a couple of 2 or 3 hour sessions a day. So on a good day, I might write for 4 or 5 hours of actual typing.
Do you have a goal, a word count goal a day, or is it just catch-as-catch-can?
I don't. It can be. I seem to write about 1,000 words an hour. That seems to be about what I write.
Holy crap! Really?
Yeah.
You're a speed typist.
Draft. So I actually wrote the most I've ever written in a day. I just finished a middle grade novel, which is with my agent, Ethan Ellenberg in New York, is looking it over to see if he thinks he can sell it. And I had been stuck on it for a long time, and then something clicked, and I realized how it had to end, and I wrote 9,000 words in a day and finished it up.
Wow.
So that's about the most I've ever written in one day.
Wow.
I've done 50,000 words in a week when I was at the Banff Center, and which was a writing retreat, and there was nothing else to do except look at the mountains.
Yeah, there you go. We are. I'm going to have to cut you off right real quick. I got a commercial I got to run, and then we'll be back to you. So please do not go away, and we'll be back in just a second. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. You are confirmed. Whoa-oh, what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst the orange trees and grass in a country-like setting. Your dog gets to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering, whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's? Well, the answer is always right there. It's the dog's. All Dogs Rule, 524-1100 in Fillmore, California. It is now 7:30, straight up. We are on the phone with Ed Willett, who is a Canadian writer in science fiction. And the guy is, like, prolific, Bobby Jean said earlier, and I would say that would be a prolific with a capital P. if you want to call and talk to Ed now that we have taken the first break of the evening, the number here in the studio, of course, is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. And you'd be talking to Ed Willett. And, of course, our producer doesn't answer the phone. We do it right here in the studio. So if you get hung up on, it's my fault. Okay. Back to you, Mr. Willett. So
I'm still here.
You did 50,000 words 1 week.
So if I was doing nothing else, I know what I'm doing, like I'm locked into the story and it's going well. That's the most I've ever done.
Uh-huh. I try to pound
that's not
out
typical. It's usually, you know, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 words a day is probably more typical.
I try to pound out like a chapter a week. I think that's...
Do you work on multiple projects at one time, or are you just like in the zone for the main one?
No, I have to work on multiple projects. I do because I have the nonfiction stuff, so I might have a novel to work on, but I'm also writing articles for the University of Regina's business magazine, Horizons, which is something I've done the last while, or there might be... you know, something else that just came up out of the blue. I also do some freelance editing for a self-publishing company called Friesen Press up here. I'm one of their editors. So I often have a manuscript to evaluate or something that I have to copy edit or content edit. What I would always love to do, what I've always wanted to do, would be to write fiction full-time, but I haven't made it pay enough yet. So, you know, if the people listening would all go out and buy my books, that would help.
Well, you have 500,000 listeners, and if you don't sell at least one book, I'll be very surprised and extremely ashamed.
Well, then if I could sell one to each of those listeners, that would be great.
Well, that would be great. I mean, but we would ask you to share because...
Yeah, you ought to get a commission for that.
Yep.
Also, you'd be a very popular, you know, you'd have no trouble at all getting guests if that happened on a regular
basis. Well, that is absolutely true. Well, we are booked up through this year, so we really don't have any problem.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the fact that you write a lot. There I am. Okay.
I guess I'll jump in there.
No, that's okay.
I should turn the microphones back on.
We really do love to talk about the writing process. Do you work with an outline? Like when you're at that coffee shop and you're going to work, is it just flowing or are you looking at notes or how do you organize yourself?
I should probably look at the original synopsis more often than I do, and then I wouldn't have to sometimes I write myself into a corner and I look back at the synopsis and realize that had I actually followed my original idea, I wouldn't have run into this problem. But generally, it's just I have a good idea of where the story is going in my head, and so I don't work from notes per se, usually.
You know, one of the things,
it's more of a flowing process for me.
Ah.
One of the things that fascinates me is something you said, that you write better, or you do write a lot at a public place. Personally, that would drive me absolutely insane. And
well,
it's would you call that new school or versus old school?
It entirely depends on the level of background noise. You know, this is a coffee shop downtown, so there's a period of time when it's not very full, and then coffee break time hits, which for some reason seems to be about an hour. I don't know; these people take a long coffee break. And I can continue unless somebody sits close to me and I can actually hear their conversation in detail.
Uh-huh.
Because if that happens, I lock onto their conversation, and then I have to put on headphones and play music or something like that.
Yeah,
but if
it's
just a general wash of noise in the background, that doesn't bother me.
Huh.
Well, you get my applause all the way around, because I have tried I really feel I can write anything, but I cannot write sci-fi and I cannot write horror. Every time I try to write those things, it ends up like Twilight Zone. It ends up like to be a thriller.
Right.
And I admire people who can do both of those genres, because I just can't wrap my head around it.
Me either.
I can't get started.
Me either. And that would be horror, H-O-R-R-O-R?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I've written about horror, the other one, too. But, you have you ever read my book, Fan Letters to a Stripper?
No.
Well, you'll have to bring it in someday.
No, but I'm really getting pissed off at Lancer. Okay, the name of this show is The Writer's Block, and I'm going to ask you the question, Ed, because we're going to be our roving reporter is going to be dialing in here in about 5 minutes. So, have you ever had writer's block? And if so, now some people haven't, and if so, what do you do about it?
I don't think I've had it in the sense that I read about other people having it. I will sometimes stop working on something for a while. I never feel like I'm blocked. I just feel like I'm lazy, and I just haven't sat down and thought my way through it. So the middle grade book that I mentioned was a good example. I told Ethan that I'll turn this around in 3 months, and it was actually more like, I don't know, maybe in 2 years after I first mentioned it to him that I actually got it done. But it was more just I got to a point and I needed to think about it more, but I had so many other projects going on that. So I don't think it's writer's block, because I'm always writing something.
Mm-hmm.
It just may not. There may be one particular project that I stall on a while I have to think through it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I said, once something clicked and I realized what the problem was, mm-hmm. I was able to rush ahead and finish it in short order. I always remember reading Isaac Asimov's Opus 100, I think it was, his 100th book, which had a lot of autobiographical material in it. And he said his working process was he would be typing something on his manual typewriter, he only wrote first drafts. He never had to edit. He just handed in his first draft. And when he got to some point where he had to think or he wanted to quit, he would just take that piece of paper out and put it aside and take the piece of paper off of the other project he was working on and just carry on from that. So I'd like to be like that, where I can always write something. So I don't think I've ever had writer's block in the sense of sitting around, smoking cigarettes and staring moodily into space.
And watching Captain
Kangaroo.
I don't smoke for one thing, so. Don't tell me you have nothing to do. I'm sorry I had to do that, because you just caught me.
What authors do you enjoy reading in the few moments that maybe you grab between all of your productivity?
I do tend to read science fiction and fantasy for fun, too. And nonfiction, I read out loud to my wife while she's cooking. Well, our kitchen's not big enough for us to cook side by side in this house. It was where we used to live. And so she will be working, and I sit and I read out loud. So we've read our way through several nonfiction books doing that. But on the science fiction side, I just finally read through Game of Thrones, and I enjoyed it very much. I like Patrick Rothfuss, who's a fellow DAW author, although, again, he hasn't written anything for a while, much like George R. R. Martin. I'm currently reading John Scalzi's latest book. I like some of his stuff. I don't know. There's David Weber. I like his Honor Harrington series. Terry Pratchett, I I always enjoyed. And there's a book I always like to recommend, or a series of books called Flavia Deluce, which is by a fellow named Alan Bradley. And Flavia is an 11-year-old girl living in England in 1951 who's a genius and has a fully equipped chemistry laboratory, and she solves crimes.
Oh, wow.
And they're brilliant, and they've been very successful for him, too. He used to live here in Saskatchewan. He was a professor at the University of Saskatchewan. And when he left here, he moved to Malta. I'm thinking that he'd had enough of Saskatchewan winters. And that's where he started writing Flavia Deluce. So I think they're up to the 9th out of a planned 10 books. So I highly recommend those
to
everyone.
Well, guess what time it is? It is time for Henry Park. So hang tough. Don't go away, Ed. We're going to be right back to you. Crap. You know what I just did? I just think I know. Hung up on everybody again. Henry, is that you?
That's me.
Okay, well, I think I just got rid of everybody again. God, I hate it. Oh, here we go. Resume call. Okay, are you there, Bobby? Hello?
Bobby, are you there?
Well, let's see. Call on hold. Resume call. I'm there. Okay, Ed, are you still there? Crap. I hate it when I do that. I hit the wrong
Richard,
button.
What do you got a lot to talk about?
Well, wait a minute. Now I got...
Maybe I should sing something while you're searching
Man,
for them.
Go ahead, Henry. Just talk. I'll try to get him in. I'll try to get him back.
All righty. Well, I've been listening with great fascination. Is there something in the water in Canada that makes people able to write that much?
I don't know. I would just, you know.
The winters in Saskatchewan are very, very long.
Yes, they are.
Is that
so
what it is?
There's a lot of water. It's all called snow, and it melts and makes a lot of water.
Bobby Jean. Well, it says she's on hold, but I don't think she is.
And he's, I guess he's in Regina. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in Regina, Saskatchewan. Yeah. Crap. I think.
Jim, you don't suppose they're all protesting me and just hung up?
No, I don't think okay. Henry. Anyway, I'll get him back, but go ahead and give me your shtick.
All right, I will. Well, you know, remember back in February when I was spitting nails over a story that publishers were hiring sensitivity readers to make sure that mm-hmm. nothing that anyone could possibly find offensive or even controversial could make it into print?
Yes.
Well, I am spitting more nails now and sharper ones.
Really?
By unanimous vote, yeah. A division of the American Library Association has voted that Laura Ingalls Wilder's name has been taken off of the award named for her
right.
to honor books that have had a great impact on children's literature. Can you think of a series that has had more powerful impact than the Little House on the Prairie books?
No.
I mean,
no.
The reason, alleged anti-Native and anti-Black sentiments in Wilder's writing. Now, you can't judge the attitudes of past literature with present-day standards and not find virtually everything offensive. Now, for adult books, I just say, if you're offended, don't read it. Or add a disclaimer.
Sure.
Remind people of when the stories were written and how the attitudes have changed. Now, for kids, I can see editing the language, but what are they upset about? The girls imagine being taken captive by Indians. Like that never happened? I mean, study the story of the Comanches, and I'm not criticizing them for it. It's just a fact. It's history. Oh, and there's an illustration from one of the books of either black-faced minstrels or very stereotyped black men. But it wasn't Ingalls. She wasn't the illustrator. She's not an artist. So pull the picture.
Right.
In my opinion, the Little House books are the best telling of the post-Civil War frontier experience that I've ever read for readers of any age, and I didn't start reading them until I was 30. And to dishonor them and their author is a crime.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Something I wouldn't expect from librarians.
I agree. And they were written back in a time when the morals of this country were totally different.
Absolutely.
So, I mean...
And, I mean, that's why you shouldn't change them, you know,
right.
Preserve them so people understand the history.
Right, right, right. Wait a minute, okay.
Now, on Tuesday, July 17th at 11 a.m.
Oh, now I got resume call, merge calls.
You just asked Henry.
All right, is everybody here?
Hello.
I'm here.
Okay.
We're here.
Henry, are you here? Oh, Jesus, I lost Henry.
Surely we should select somebody else to be in charge.
You know what? I need to retire.
Jerry's going to be the producer next week.
Okay, wait a minute. Add to group call. All right, Henry, are you here? Henry? All right, Ed, you're still here.
I'm still here.
Okay, Henry. Okay, come on. All right, don't make me do that. Here we go. Henry, I think we got him back. No, not yet. Anyway. Well, it was really nice talking to Henry for about the 2 seconds that I got to talk to Henry. So.
And one of the things we were talking about while you were gone was the fact that Henry asked, what's in the water up in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, it makes you guys so prolific.
Yeah, and I said, well, the winters are very long, and you have lots of snow that ends up melting for all the water. So seriously, what I know quite a bit about Canada, but I haven't spent any time in Saskatchewan. I sort of guess that a lot of people have not, even people from Saskatchewan. But what's the winter like up there? Seriously.
Well, I mean, it varies from winter to winter. But I guess on average, we'll get snow to stick usually sometime in November. And then it will melt completely in April, probably March to April. So you got snow on the ground for most of that time. Now you might get a warm spell that melts some of it in the middle of the winter.
I imagine that sort of thing. That coffee shop has a heater, right?
Yes. And temperature-wise, I think the average high temperature in January is, I think the average high, like a normal high, and it would be like minus 12 Celsius, which is what, about 10 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. That'd be the high, average high. And then the when it gets really cold, the record lows are temperatures like in Fahrenheit, it would be somewhere south of minus 50 for the record lows. So, and then in the summertime, our record high for Saskatchewan ever was in the 30s, and it was 114 degrees Fahrenheit. So we have an extreme climate.
Wow.
Well, you're up in the Great Plains, too.
Yeah, it's the northern end of the Great Plains, right. So we get tornadoes and all that kind of stuff, too, you know, just for good measure.
Right. Yeah, I know some people that live up in Saskatoon.
Yeah, that's about 2.5 hours north of Regina.
Yeah, it's up there. I know.
Do you enjoy
that's still southern Saskatchewan.
Do you enjoy writing for the university?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you enjoy writing for the university?
I enjoy writing for anybody who will pay me.
The thing I
write for is the business school has a magazine called Horizons. So it's mostly interviews with various professors and talk about the various programs that they have there in the business school. So I've enjoyed doing that for the last, I think I'm on my second year now. Yeah. And it comes up just twice a year. So it's, you know, I have a lot of these little sidelines that I do. I used to write entertainment features for the newspaper here, so I got to interview fun people like Weird Al Yankovic and opera singers. One of the Oak Ridge Boys, I remember interviewing him, things like that. So that was fun for while it lasted.
entertainment news can be feisty to cover the Oscars every year back with my UPI days, and that was probably the one story that I missed when I got out of radio for a while. It just seems so much fun, and it's such a different thing. I mean, and it's changed drastically over the years. Now entertainment is not so much entertainment as it is. It's like politics, you know. It's like gotcha, get you,
right? Yeah.
And stuff, and which kind of takes the fun away from it, just makes it more hardcore.
I was a weekly newspaper reporter, and the only reason I went into journalism was because I wanted to be a writer, and I knew you couldn't make a living at it. So I went into something that was writing related that I thought I could get a job at. So I was a newspaper reporter, and then I was news editor of my hometown newspaper. At the age of 24, I was editor of the newspaper.
Wow.
And I don't really... There are times when I miss being a reporter, but most of the time I don't, because I never really liked asking people questions that they didn't want to answer. And you're not a very good reporter if you don't ask people questions they don't want
to answer.
I went from there, and I was communications officer for the Saskatchewan Science Center. And then I got into science writing, actually, while I was doing that, and then went freelance. So I occasionally, especially if I'm following the news from Weyburn, Saskatchewan, which is where I was the editor, I'll think, oh, I wish I was there to cover that story. But that's a faint and fleeting feeling.
Well, did the science position help you with your science fiction, just out of curiosity?
Well, it did, because I was hired at the Saskatchewan Science Center just when it was starting up, and that meant that a lot of my initial job was not so much public relations as it later became more of, and, you know, copywriting and stuff like that, but a lot of the initial work was actually writing copy for the exhibits that were being built. So I would be researching the science behind the various exhibits, and I had to write, you know, clear copy that told people which buttons to push and what they were supposed to be learning from it. Nobody reads that stuff in a science center. They just press the buttons and wait to see what happens.
Oh,
but, you know, you put it out there anyway. And along the way, I started writing a science column, kind of as an adjunct to that, that ran in the local newspaper. And then when I went freelance, I kept writing the science column. So the science column ran for 17 years in the Regina Leader Post and a few other newspapers, and I was on the CBC Radio's Afternoon Edition program here for about the same length of time. I was their regular science columnist, and so I did a lot of science writing, and it really kind of started when I was at the Science Center.
Very cool. You know, we're out of time, and we have to say goodbye to you, but thank you for spending your evening with us. It's been enjoyable. And it's been a hoot.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been wonderful having you. And if you can give us your email address and your website address. And
The website is edwardwillett.com, EDWARDWILLETT.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Ewillett, Ewillett. It's that second T that everybody misses.
Right.
Two T's on Willett. And I'm on Facebook at edward.willett. So I'm really easy to find. If you Google Edward Willett, I'm the first couple of pages of results, which must drive the other Edward Willetts crazy. But there you go.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks again for joining us. And say hello to Mickey for us.
I will.
He's one of our favorites. And if you find yourself with something to do in January or February of 2019, give the bookie a call. It might get you back on the show.
I will do that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Have a good time. Bye-bye, Ed. Okay. Henry, sorry. I don't know what happened. I just did it. It was my fault. Anyway.
Did you just disappear?
Yeah. He went away.
We didn't get to find out what he felt about Yellowstone.
I know, huh? Well, I'll have him back on next week because I want to finish the story. Anyway, I'm mad at Lancer.
Why? What did Lancer do?
Oh, he's like, he just takes all these women and gets them naked and they do things.
Oh, come on.
And then he leaves.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
I'm not going to marry him off at this point.
Well, yeah, but Bobby Jean, come on, help me out here.
Well, at least he doesn't kill them off.
Oh,
there
yeah.
is some hope.
And I can tell you this much, nor will he.
I did once, but only once. Only one time. Only one time.
So are you finished Santa Fe and you're on the next
I one? Finished Santa Fe. I'm actually about four pages left in L.A.
In L.A. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. The small Russian contingent has landed.
Yeah.
And now the big contingent is waiting offshore to get the flare.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, so, I started Santa Fe, but then I ended up having to go to this other place called City Born.
Yeah.
And I had to get myself in the city, and it was kind of a lengthy book, so
like
I enjoyed every minute of it, but I wasn't able to read anything else this week.
Well, next week we have, actually, it's his third time on the show, Phil Donnelly. He'll be with us, and he's going to be talking about his new book, although I don't have the title
to it.
We
don't have the book, and what he sent was a press guide thing, and I thought it was the book, so I sent him an email and said, I need the book.
The PDF, get us the PDF. Yeah. So hoping we're going to get that, because, of course, this is the writer's block, we are cheap. We don't buy books.
Really cheap.
Bobby, you got anything exciting happening that you want to announce before we get off the air?
Well, the Out West Scout, which is the Out West Shop's blog, and eventually also back to our electronic email, has two new writers that have just joined us, Abraham Hatfield and Marietta Morse.
Okay.
And they are writing on the blog page of outwestshop.com or outwestmktg. And they each have their own Facebook pages, their own Pinterest pages, and they're very fun to work with.
Good. And Bob, what do you got?
Well, just continuing.
He's got a Steelers shirt on.
That's right. I'm from Pittsburgh. You know,
yes, he is.
Steelers on my phone. My dog has a Steeler collar. Yeah, it's there. Huh. just continuing to edit. We've pretty much edited the video on the short film we shot.
Good.
Called Sundown, which is based on a Marty Robbins song called Sundown, The Legend of Bill Thaxton. And I just sent it over to my co-director to beef up the sound a little bit and moving things along and trying to make some final decisions on what the final cuts are going to be and how to add the muzzle flashes in post-production. We didn't use blanks. I didn't want to go there, insurance purposes, things like that, for the gunfight. And I just, you know, I'm not a gun person, and so I would prefer not to do that. So, and it's much easier now nowadays to add that stuff later. So we're going to add muzzle flashes to the gunshots.
Okay.
And overdub the sound.
Sure. So. Sure. Cool. Well, this is another Thursday evening. We have pretty much shot in the butt, and I want to give my thanks to Ed Willett for joining us from Regina, Saskatchewan in Canada.
Hey.
Mr. Bob Brill, of course, sitting here and leaning back in his chair.
I'm not going to tell you that old joke of, you know, how that came about, right?
What?
It's how you spell Canada. C-A-N-A-D. Yeah. It's like you could start spelling banana. I just don't know how to stop.
And Bobby Jean, of course, is always a pleasure to have you with us telephonically. And the bookie, always great to have you in the studio. And that's it for us. And Henry, I apologize. I'll give you an email this week, and we'll get you back on next week and finish up the story about Yellowstone because it was starting to get good. Okay, that's it for us. Y'all have a good night, and we, of course, are out of here.